This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Well, there's a bit of a tradition that's developed in the Christian world of former missionaries writing books about their experiences, but they're usually memoirs and they're usually full of cultural conflict and adventures, disease and sickness, hardship and often some level of triumph eventually. Well, Jennifer Ann is a former missionary nurse and her new book is a novel called Broken Pottery. It's about a young girl who suffers from a fistula after quite a complicated birth. Jennifer Ann, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Katrina.
Now, I was interested to hear that you had some fairly formative years in Africa as a child, didn't you? But on the other side, East Africa, what was that like?
Yes, I did. My parents were medical missionaries actually in Ethiopia, and we were in a very rural village where the water came on bags carried by donkeys. And I remember there were frogs that used to jump out of the water. And my father was a doctor there. And I remember one time he sewed up a man's arm that had been mangled by a camel. So it was very rural.
Wow, that must have, I think, made an impression on you as a child and just, I guess, being in the African landscape. Do you still sort of have a love for that?
Oh, I do. I really miss the African landscape. Mm. And as soon as you step off a plane into Africa, once Africa's got under your skin, you feel immediately at home.
Mm, that's interesting. And so what led you back to Africa as an adult then?
Well, I always had a heart for Africa and I wanted to do whatever God wanted me to do. Mm. And so I ended up at Sydney Missionary and Bible College, which I should say is an excellent Bible college if anyone's interested in going on missions. And that's where I met my husband at Bible College. And
what's his name?
His name's Greg.
Greg,
yes.
Okay.
He wasn't interested in missions. And every Friday we used to have
a... So what's he doing going to Sydney Missionary Bible College if he doesn't want to be a missionary?
Maybe to meet someone, which he did. So he always went to the Australian prayer group, whereas I always went to, you know, a mission prayer group.
Right.
And then, but we felt it was the right thing that God wanted us to get married. So we got married and then we had children. And then I thought, oh, I can't take my child overseas, you know, as a new mother. And then Greg actually felt that God was leading us then to the mission field.
Wow.
So but the time Josh was about five, we realised that's what God wanted us to do. So we just ended up with Sim, Australia, and ended up in West Africa.
So did you plan to go to West Africa or was that just the luck of the draw? I mean, say in that?
No, we did have a big say in it. We didn't actually plan to go to West Africa, but they match your jobs and what you're good at, particularly the husband. And for Greg, he went and managed a guest house and he's a builder. So there was a lot of construction work that needed to be done. So that's why we went there. And that was actually one of my issues because I thought, well, what am I going to do? Because I had two kids by then, five and two and a half by the time we went to West Africa. And I think before we left, actually an Aboriginal pastor was at my parents' home and I said to him, well, I don't know what I'm going to do over there. And he said to me, you know, Jenny, your job will be to look after your children. And he was so right. While they were young, that was my job. Mm. And that just helped focus me because when you go over there, there's so much need and you feel like you can run about and do all these things, but really God wants you to look after your family first. And then as he gives you time, then you can go and help other people.
Well, I can only imagine, though, that in a traditional society, you being there as a mother probably would have been the best thing because you would have been there with other mothers.
Yes. So you got to meet all the other mothers with the children.
Yeah. And you would have had some mothering skills as well that you would have been able to all, I imagine, share with each other.
I tried.
What was it like for you adjusting to life as a missionary? Did you experience any culture shock when you went back there?
Yeah, I have to say we did experience a lot of culture shock because it is a completely different culture. And I think one of the funny yet hard things for me is that Africans like to give compliments. Mm. And one of the compliments is to call you fat.
Oh, Alexander McCall Smith has I don't know if you've read any of his books.
Yeah,
a series of books set in Botswana. And he coined the term traditionally built because in Africa it's good to be traditionally built, isn't it?
Yes, it shows that you're healthy because there is a lot of illness and it also shows that you have enough money to buy food. So, but until you've actually experienced it, like like, so strange men who you'd never met before would come up to you, and I'll say,
"Hello, Fati."
Yes, I'll say it in Hausa so you can get the real emphasis, and they'd go, "Kina da kiba." So they'd really put their emphasis on it, and they're saying, "You are with fatness. You are with big fatness." You know,
say it again in the Hausa, is it?
It's kina da kiba. So they'd just say, "You are really, really fat," and you know, I struggle to take that as a compliment. Like, yes. Coming from a Western culture, but you got that all the time.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. And the Africans have a wonderful sense of humour, so we've really enjoyed that.
Were there any day-to-day difficulties? I mean, I imagine having, you had two young children when you went, I mean, just things like nappies and, you know, what were the things that logistically were hard? Was it getting water? Was it washing? Was it cooking? What did you struggle with?
I think the food preparation, because anything that you were going to eat raw, like your basic salad, things like lettuce, tomato, you had to put into Milton. Mm. And all the water, drinking water, had to go through Katadyn filters, and that took time. So you had to be very careful what you drank, or you'd end up with dysentery or giardia. And trust me, lettuce, after it's been, you know, in Milton for about 20 minutes, isn't good. It doesn't look good. I think we gave up eating lettuce because it was just too limp and horrible by the end.
Okay. Mm. And what were the challenges that the local women faced then in their daily life?
I think the local women faced a lot of illness, like malaria is still very prevalent. And one of my best African friends over there, who was ended up my son's best friend, he died of malaria when he was 14. So those things do still happen, and just getting appropriate medical care and being able to access
you
that.
You wouldn't think a 14-year-old boy would die of malaria these days, would you?
No. Well, I don't think they were able to get the care. Sometimes they leave it till it's too late and then, or they don't realise, oh, this is really aggressive malaria because it's different types.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's probably quite common and people are used to having it.
Yes, yeah.
Get a bit maybe blasé about it.
Yes, yeah. You can.
My guest this morning is Jennifer Ann. She's the author of a new novel called Broken Pottery, and she spent quite a few years in West Africa as a missionary, firstly as a mum, but then you're actually a nurse as well, aren't you?
Yes, I'm a registered nurse. I trained at Royal Prince Alfred Hospital, which is an excellent hospital still, I believe. Yep.
Yeah, and I can only imagine there would have been plenty of opportunities for a nurse where you were.
There was, yes. At one point I was a nurse for all the missionaries, so we gave out a lot of vaccinations, and if there were any accidents, broken arms or anything like that, or people had malaria, they usually came to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And did you end up working with any of the local women?
Yes, I did. And that's actually how I ended up at the hospital where they had the obstetric fistula patients, because I had worked with a particular tribal group and they ended up being a big tribal fight with another group, and so the ladies that I worked with had to leave that area. And the only other place that I could find this particular group of people was at the hospital, so that's how I ended up there. And at the hospital I did a lot of health education with them to do with obstetric fistula and clean water and nutritious food, that sort of thing.
Yes, public health kind of stuff, which would have been much needed. Well, let's talk about the book Broken Pottery. I mean, firstly, when you came back, did you plan to write a book? Is this something that you wanted to do, or was it just something that kind of came upon you?
Actually, I've always wanted to write a book ever since I was about 16.
Yep.
But I never felt that I had the right material. I didn't know exactly what I thought God wanted me to write about.
Okay.
And when I came back, you know, if you meet these fistula women, which I'll describe in a minute, you're so moved by their plight that I thought, look, if God enables me to write a book, it might actually help them more, you know, than if I was still in Africa. So that's why I've written it.
And why did you decide to write a fiction book rather than sort of the typical missionary memoir, I guess?
Yeah, well, I wanted it to be a good read, okay, because our life's a little bit boring, so I needed to spice it up a bit. And it sort of has all the fun and confusion of a Westerner going to Africa, but there's a bit of romance in there as well. It's also with dealing with this issue of obstetric fistula.
Yeah.
So hopefully people will actually enjoy the read as well.
Well, I want you to read us the dedication of the book. I'll just pass it over.
Oh, okay.
Because this to me says a lot about, I guess, your admiration and your heart for the women that you came across.
Okay, it says, "This book is dedicated to the girls and women who remained hopeful when all hope was crushed, who displayed courage when those around were fearful, who sought dignity when it was denied them, who accepted the God who loves and watches over them.
Mm, thanks for that. So now tell us about your main character. Is it Aisha? Is that how you say it, or Aisha?
You actually say Aisha.
Aisha, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And tell us about her.
Well, she really is the typical obstetric fistula patient. So she's a young girl who's been married very young. Mm-hmm. And that's really part of the problem, because when these girls are married so young, even though they may have their first or second period and get pregnant, their pelvic area
is... First or second period ever and they get pregnant?
Yes.
Like we're talking 12, married. 13.
Yes.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
And you see their pelvic area is too small to actually deliver the baby.
Mm.
And that's how the whole problem evolves. And so they might then labour for up to 6 days and they may not have access. In fact, a lot of cases they don't have access to good medical care like we do in Australia.
Mm.
And so finally, unfortunately, in most cases the baby ends up dying. Usually it's a boy. Because it's a larger baby, because they just can't deliver the baby.
Yeah.
And then a couple of days later, the baby, they are able to pass the baby. And then a couple of days after that, they start leaking urine and or feces, because there's now a hole, because of the pressure of the head, there's now a hole that's developed between the bladder and bowel. And the vagina, so they can't control it. So you can imagine these poor girls, they've been told all their life, you know, you're to get married, you're to have a baby, that's really what you're to do in life.
That's how
you're a successful woman. And then suddenly at 14, they've failed at all those things.
Mm.
And then they do smell. It does smell badly when people are leaking urine and feces. There's flies everywhere. And then... people don't tend to understand the disease process, and so they ostracize them and they say that they're cursed by God. So imagine having that weight on your shoulders. And sometimes they even tell them, well, you now have an incurable venereal disease. So often the husband divorces them. Can I say, not every time. There are families that don't do this, but there are other families, because of not understanding what's happened, who do go ahead and do this. So often we would see these girls come into the hospital, girls and young women, and, you know, they'd have their head down, they wouldn't look you in the face, they did smell, they were often bedraggled and malnourished, their clothing, but still hopeful that somehow they'd be able to get help.
And what happens to Aisha? I mean, without giving away the whole story, I mean, I take it it's a hopeful story.
There is a hopeful story. And she does meet up with another African lady from a different tribal group who basically ends up taking her to a hospital that helps her.
Mm.
And there she finds healing for her physical condition, because the actual operation is quite simple, depending on what the complications are. And, so then she does get help and ends up happy. I couldn't write a book that had a sad ending.
No.
So anyone out there, who likes a happy ending, it does have one.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Mm. That's good. And what are you hoping people are going to get out of this, Jennifer?
Look, I hope that they'll be moved by the plight of these women, and hopefully they might go to my website, which is www.jenniferann, that's A-N-N, no E,
and without the E.
Without the E, .info, I-N-F-O, and there I have a mission agency called SIM Australia, and that's who we went with to West Africa with. And they might feel like they can pray or donate to these fistula projects. At the moment, we have one in Niger, and they're looking at opening a new fistula hospital attached to the leprosy hospital there, and they're looking for donations to help with operating theatre tables and operating theatre lights, so that they can help some of the fistula women in Niger. Can I just say, because there's like 8,000 new cases every year.
Yeah, it's a very big problem, isn't it? Yeah. Well, look, I think reading this book is a great way to kind of, I guess, become more aware of it, and I guess also to identify with somebody, that you've created a character people can really identify with and learn about how just it feels and what their life is like.
Yes.
So, no, congratulations on the book.
Thank
I understand
you.
It's doing really well.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming in.
Thanks a lot.
That's Jennifer Ann. She's the author of Broken Pottery. You can check out her website. It's jenniferann.info.
This has been a Hope 103.2 podcast. For helpful articles, station news, videos, devotional emails, and more podcasts, visit hope1032.com.au.